All right, I'd like to call to order the June 2nd, 2020 Planning and Zoning Commission meeting to order. I'd like to take some time to thank everyone for joining us via Zoom. This meeting is taking place online due to the ongoing social distancing requirements to ensure the community's is available to participate. Can we please have Mrs. Ancona give us a roll call of the commissioners?
Chair Gamble?
Here.
Vice Chair Harrington?
Here.
Commissioner Bergsma?
Here.
Commissioner Hurst?
Here.
Commissioner Hong? Commissioner Posey?
Here.
Commissioner Sturman?
Here.
Let the record show we have a quorum.
All right, thank you. All right, so welcome and thank you again for joining us remotely. Obviously today's meeting is gonna be a little bit different than it usually is, but our regular flow and order is going to remain the same. In order to participate, you must be logged into Zoom directly by your computer or telephone. And for those who are unfamiliar with the Zoom software, I'd like to provide a quick parameter on how to participate. So currently everyone's microphone is muted except for myself, Mr. Joe Andrews from the Oro Valley Legal Department, and our planning staff meeting host, Mr. Spaeth. So everyone else will be muted throughout the meeting. And as the meeting goes forth, we will unmute presenters and commenters, and we will let you know when, if you wish to have a turn to speak, that you can speak. Ms. Ancona, will you please let the record reflect that Ellen Hong joined the meeting at 6:02 p.m.? All right, so if you wish to address the commission on any item during our call to the audience, please raise your hand. And I don't mean like this. There is actually a little button. If you click on the participants icon towards the bottom of the screen, it should open up a dialogue box. And if you scroll down to where your name is, once your name is selected and click on your name. And once it's selected, a pop-up box will come up and there will be a little blue hand. And if you click on that, that alerts me that you would like to ask a question and speak. For those of you that are participating via the phone, you will need to press *9 to raise your hand. So please wait until the appropriate agenda item has been announced, and after I announce the opportunity, then please go ahead and raise your hand, but please do not raise your hand prior to the topic being spoken about. All right, and then when that happens, we will unmute you, and I will need you to make sure that you are unmuted on your own personal device as well. So as we go through, there will be a couple just pauses in between switching and just the limitations of Zoom. And as with all commission meetings, please clearly state your name and whether or not you are an Oro Valley resident. Also, speakers are limited to no more than 3 minutes, and just as in person, a timer will be used, and we ask that you respect that 3 minute limit. So I would like to do the call to the audience now. And during this time, any member of the public is allowed to address the commission on any issue not listed on today's agenda. Pursuant to the Arizona Open Meeting Law, individual commission members may ask town staff to review the matter, ask that the matter be placed on a future agenda, or respond to criticism made by speakers. However, the commission may not discuss matters raised during call to the audience. If you wish to address the commission on a on a matter not listed on the agenda, please notify us by clicking the raise your hand icon on your computer or by pressing *9 on your phone now. And we'll just wait a couple more seconds. I don't see any hands coming up. All right, so at this time, I will close the call to the audience. I would like to introduce council members in attendance. I believe we have, let me just see here. We've got Vice Mayor Melanie Barrett, and I thought I saw, is Councilman Bill Rodman still on here? I thought he left at some point.
I don't see him. Nope.
No, okay. So welcome, Vice Mayor Barrett. Thank you for attending. I'd like to turn the time over to you right now for the council liaison comments. Vice Mayor Barrett, you may proceed.
Yes, thank you. Here, I'm going to do this without video for the moment, but thank you for having me. And I'd like to give a council liaison update. On May 20th, we had a public meeting on the St. Mark's Church sign in the right of way, and it was recommended to council by the commission, and that was approved by council. We're currently in the middle of reviewing the town manager's recommended budget. We've had two study sessions on it, as well as a single council meeting with the original unveiling. It would be scheduled for tentative approval on June 5th and final approval, on June 15th and final approval around the middle of July. So there's also been a Budget and Finance Commission study session, special meeting today as they're going over the budget as well. So that's consuming a lot of the council's time and attention. We have some upcoming meetings that deal with planning and zoning issues. Tomorrow, June 3rd, we'll look at the 2 Oracle Place Master Sign Program. We'll have the public hearing and a PAD text amendment and CUP to allow grazing in Rancho Vistoso and Stone Canyon, which both of those were heard by the Planning and Zoning Commission. And there will be a discussion regarding the Vistoso Golf property, which has been brought by a couple of council members. And so that should be interesting. June 17th, we're going to hear Stone Canyon request for final plat amendment to remove a no access easement. Oh, I'm sorry. June 17th would also be the date of the tentative budget adoption, not June 15th. I'm sorry. And then we have some additional things coming up in July, and that's it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Vice Mayor Barrett. Ms. Ancona, will you please read our first agenda item?
Review and approval of the May 5th, 2020 regular session meeting minutes.
All right. And if we can unmute all of the commissioners and if I can get a motion. Commissioner Gamble. Hurst.
Commissioner Gamble. Neil Hurst.
Yes.
I make a motion to approve the minutes of the subject meeting.
All right. So we've got the May 5th, 2020 meeting minutes that right. You are approving. Thank you. Is there a second?
A second, Hans Sturman.
Thank you. All right. And then Ms. Ancona, can you please do a roll call vote for these?
Chair Gamble?
Aye.
Vice Chair Harrington?
Aye.
Commissioner Bergsma?
Aye.
Commissioner Hurst?
Aye.
Commissioner Hong?
Aye.
Commissioner Posey?
Aye.
Commissioner Sturman?
Aye.
Motion passes 7-0.
Right. Thank you. Now, Ms. Ancona, if you could please introduce our second agenda item.
Discussion and possible action on a conceptual architecture request for a new multi-purpose building at Push Ridge Christian Academy, 2000761.
All right. Thank you. All right. I'm going to turn the time over to Ms. Oden. She is giving the staff presentation.
All right. Thank you, Chair Gamble. Good evening. My name is Hannah Oden, and I'm a senior planner with the town of Oro Valley. All right, next slide, please. The purpose of this case is to consider conceptual architecture for a new multi-purpose building at Push Ridge Christian Academy, which is located east of Oracle Road between Calle Concordia and Linda Vista Boulevard. The architecture, which is submitted by Carhup and Cueva Architects, incorporate similar design themes, colors, and materials to the existing campus, all of which was included in the applicant's submittal. The proposal conforms to the approved development plan for the campus and is reviewed for conformance with the design principles and design standards of the zoning code. Conceptual architecture for this project, which follows commercial design standards, requires a recommendation from Planning and Zoning Commission with final approval from Town Council. And so this case is presented tonight for discussion and possible recommendation. Okay, next slide, please. So to orient ourselves, the subject property is located east of Oracle Road between Calle Concordia and Linda Vista Boulevard. To the east of the campus is National Forest, and Canyon del Oro High School and the Oro Valley Aquatic Center are located west of the property across Oracle Road. Canyon del Oro Baptist Church is located south of the campus. The entire campus property is approximately 48 acres, and a master development plan was approved in 2003. All right, next slide, please. So this slide illustrates existing campus development and the proposed building location. So again, the purpose of this case is only on architecture, and this slide is just meant to provide some context. So currently built on site is building one, which is the largest structure on campus. Buildings two and building three serve as classroom buildings, and the modular building is anticipated to begin construction soon. The proposed multi-purpose building is shown in orange and is approximately 17,000 square feet. An existing outdoor performing arts amphitheater is located just north of the proposed multi-purpose building. The proposed building conforms to the previously approved master development plan. However, the applicant is requesting a height increase to 36 feet, which I will discuss in the following slide. Existing building heights on campus range from 18 to 28 feet, which is shown on this slide. All right, next slide, please. So this slide shows the north and east elevations of the proposed multi-purpose building. The exterior paint color matches the existing campus buildings, and similar metal paneling is used. The majority of the exterior will be smooth masonry block, but split face block is used along the base of the building to articulate the facades and break up the building mass. Metal canopies that match existing structures on campus are used at the entry points to the building, as shown on this slide. The applicant has stepped back much of the upper portion of the building to break up the bulk of the structure and has varied the roofline with parapets. The north building elevation faces the main courtyard and entrance to campus and will also serve as the primary building entrance. And it will be the most visible facade from within campus, and the applicant has provided substantial articulation with a variety of materials, windows, and varied wall planes and a varied roofline. And that north building elevation is on the top of the slide. So the east facade, which is on the bottom of the slide, will face Building 2 and National Forest. So eventually this facade will also face future campus buildings as the school expands. It is the least visible part of the building. There is an additional entrance on this facade with a covered patio. Including additional windows on this side is difficult due to the interior layout of the building. And as mentioned previously, the applicant is requesting an increase in height to 36 feet. The zoning code allows buildings in private school zoning districts to be 24 feet tall. However, the zoning code does allow gymnasiums in the zoning district to go up to 36 feet subject to approval by the Planning and Zoning Commission. So the applicant is requesting this allowance. The proposed building is over 700 feet away from Oracle Road and will have minimal to no view impacts from Oracle Road or adjacent properties. As previously stated, existing buildings on campus do range from 18 to 28 feet high, and I will discuss the view impact from Oracle Road in a couple slides. Okay, next slide, please. So this slide shows the proposed west and south building elevations. So similar to other elevations, the applicant has used a variety of colors and materials and has broken up the mass of the building by stepping back the upper floor, using metal paneling and varying the roofline. Awnings on the upper floor windows on the south facade add additional visual interest. The south elevation will not be highly visible, but the west elevation will be partially situated behind the future modular building and face the school parking lot, so it will be more visible from within the campus. Okay, next slide, please. So as previously mentioned, the applicant is requesting a building height allowance of 36 feet, and the views from Oracle Road will be minimal due to dense vegetation and existing topography. This slide shows a view rendering of the proposed building with a yellow arrow pointing towards that roofline. As you can see, only a small portion of the roofline will be visible and will not negatively impact mountain views. For reference, the Canyon del Oro Baptist Church sanctuary, which is indicated with a white arrow, is also 36 feet high and is approximately 600 feet away from Oracle Road. The proposed multipurpose building will be approximately 700 feet away from Oracle Road. Next slide, please. So as discussed in the staff report, the proposed multipurpose building utilizes similar colors, materials, and design as existing buildings on campus. This slide shows the approved architecture for building three, the existing building two, which is an existing classroom building, and building one. The proposed multipurpose building uses the same body color, similar metal paneling, and a similar shade structure and will be compatible. The similar design elements create a cohesive theme for the campus. Next slide, please. In summary, the proposed building expansion has been found to meet the design principles and standards of the zoning code, and staff recommends approval. So this concludes my presentation, and the applicant is here tonight to present additional details about the project. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Ms. Oden. I will now turn the time over to Mark Cueva, the applicant.
Hi, good evening.
Hi, Mark.
Chair Gamble, Vice Chair Harrington, and members of the Commission. I appreciate your time this evening. As Ms. Oden mentioned, my name is Mark Cueva. I am a partner at Carhoff & Cueva Architects and have had the pleasure to work on several projects in the town of Oro Valley, notably the Basis School in Steampunk Village and the Lehman Academy in Oro Valley, both of which have been very successful projects for us. I just wanted to take a few minutes to just expand a bit on what Ms. Oden already very eloquently presented to you, and just give you a little bit more information about the building and its function within the campus. As she mentioned, this is a multi-purpose building. It's meant to be a gathering space for all the students. It's going to be a place where the existing cafeteria, which is too small for the current population, will be moved to, along with a full commercial kitchen that will be preparing all their meals on site and serving them as noted. Next slide, please. I will expand on the floor plan a little bit more further down in the presentation. This plan just gives a little bit of context. The idea for this building is to nestle it within the existing landscaping. As you'll notice from some of the perspectives, you'll see that some of the portion of the building, particularly the south side, is partially below ground. so that we can really incorporate it into the natural vegetation. Next slide, please. This is the main view that you would see as you come around the drop-off area and the parking lot. And it's really meant to attract your attention towards the green canopy, which is the same color that's used on the other building too. And it's meant to draw your eye towards the main entrance into this facility. The east elevation, or the west elevation, pardon me, is more of a utilitarian area where the kitchen services will be accessed for deliveries. For the electrical service will be accessed, fire riser. And so we wanted to mute that area a little bit more and draw attention more towards the front. And I think we've achieved that. Next slide, please. This is partially the rear elevation that would only be viewed from the forest as well as building number two. We have access to the roof line and we've tried to minimize it as much as possible by painting the ladder the same color as the metal panel. And dropping down the access into the parapet so that the ladder would not extend beyond the profile of the building, thus minimizing its visual impact, even though this wouldn't be seen from any of the public areas, either from Oracle or the parking lot or your approach towards the building. This porch in the back that you see here is going to be a pedestrian connection, eventual pedestrian connection from the future expansion that the campus may do further down the road. Next slide, please. I won't dwell too much on here. This is just to give you a little context on where this building is. And I believe Ms. Odin already explained this in full detail. Next slide, please. This is a sample of materials that we're proposing to use. Starting on the top left corner, the green is the accent color that's being used on the metal entry porch. Number five is a product by Bunger Panel. It's a faux rust panel that has a very very accurate appearance to a fully rusted, naturally rusted metal. It's a product that we've used at the basis school, if you want to have a reference of where it's been used before. But the benefit of this is that it looks like it's rust without the messiness of rust, because when you first install the panel, it comes shiny, and then you allow weather to do its work, and it will eventually be rusted. But during that time, the color leaches out and damages it. You know, it stains adjacent materials like concrete and walls. So we wanted to provide a product that would give you the finished look of what they're after with less maintenance, but it'll be the same panel profile that's being used on the adjacent buildings. The next color is the paint that would eventually, that is as close a match to the metal panel as possible, that would be painting the railing access ladder onto the roof so that it blends in with its background. Number six is the anodized aluminum window mullions that we're proposing to use, which matches the existing buildings on campus. And below that, we have an example of the masonry block that's being used, using the same colors as the existing building. Next slide, please. And this is basically a quick layout of the building to give you some context of how this building will be used. As I mentioned earlier, this will be a multi-use building, with the center area being the basketball court as well as cafeteria area, where tables will be laid out and the students will be able to enjoy their lunch. But it'll also be used as a gathering space for either presentations, school plays, graduations, etc. So we've provided a platform there on the right side, and it'll be used for school functions. And then on the left side, you see we have a full commercial kitchen with a cooking line, walk-in freezers and refrigerators. And the idea is the students would come in on the north side of that, where food pickup is, form three lines, go towards the kitchen pay for their meal, exit out that bottom door, and then go to their seating location. This plan also incorporates some boys and girls locker rooms and restrooms for sporting events, for basketball, volleyball, and we've also incorporated some storage spaces for PE and a small classroom for team meetings or any other additional functions they may have. Next slide, please. Again, these are just some of the views that Minnesota already expanded on. We wanted to really make this building unique and use the benefit of the height of the building as a kind of beacon for this campus. You know, this is going to be the building on campus where is not dedicated just for classroom space, but it's rather more of a community gathering location. And so we wanted to, you know, express that in being a welcoming, having a welcoming facade with a front north building elevation where kids will be able to gather in and be together and highlight the function of this building. Next slide, please. Okay, these are just some other views. As you can see, the south building elevation is partially buried below grade to really incorporate it into the natural landscape, trying to minimize the impact into the native vegetation trying to be as sensitive as possible to the surrounding area. Next slide, please. Here's some additional pictures of the campus and their location. As you can see, we're using a lot of the tan colors, rust colors, trying to really incorporate it into the campus, but also let it stand out as a kind of a unique building within this facility. Also having its visibility from the drop-off area. You know, we wanted to make this a feature. Next slide, please. Next slide, please. Just some other highlights of the green that we're incorporating, the metal panel and the block, painted block, shade treatment above the windows. We're trying to incorporate some of those elements into this building as well to create this cohesive language on campus. Next slide, please. This is just a picture of the building that's currently under construction try to take some of these design cues into our building. Next slide, please. And as we discussed, you know, we're trying to also be mindful of the impact that this would have along the corridor of Oracle Road. And so, as you can see, you know, the visual impact is minimized by the dense vegetation and the distance away from Oracle Road. With that, I would be open to take any questions that the commission may have.
All right, thank you, Mr. Cueva. So at this time, we're going to take questions from the Planning and Zoning Commission only. And if you have a question to ask, please click on the raise your hand button now. Commissioner Posey.
Yes, thank you, Chair Gamble. I just are the air conditioner units the units are going to be on top of the building, and I was wondering if that was true, how much additional feet is that going to add? Well, also the screening. How much additional feet is that going to add to the 36 feet?
Sure. Thank you, Commissioner Posey. To answer your question, yes, it is the intent to have all the mechanical units on the roof. And we are designing this such that the mechanical units will be screened by the parapets themselves. So the benefit that we have on this particular campus is that all of the approach and all of the views that you'll have of this building from a distance will be looking up. And so, therefore, as you're looking up towards the building, the parapet of the building itself will provide a screen to the mechanical unit, so they will not be visible from a viewer from around the building. So we're not proposing to add any additional height to the building to screen the mechanical units.
Okay, thank you so much.
Yes, ma'am.
All right, are there any other questions from commissioners? Okay. At this time, I'd like to open the public hearing. So any member of the public that has a question or a comment, now for this topic, now's your chance. So if you are on Zoom, please click the raise your hand button, or if you are on your phone, if you dial *9, that will also raise your hand. So was there any members of the public that would like to comment? Okay, I'm not seeing any hands come up, so I will close the public hearing and open the discussion to commissioners. If you guys have any comments or other questions, please raise your hand now. Commissioner Hong.
Okay, I can.
Okay, we can hear you now.
Yeah, good. I'm wondering, this is looks like a beautiful site, you know, large enough of acreage, and looks like a very great opportunity to have some sort of a green building built, you know, incorporating some of the, I don't know, you know, drawing from the natural resources that are there. I understand there will be air conditioner stored on the roof and so forth, but I just want to see if there's any room for, you know, possibly incorporating those green elements, you know, using more of the natural resources and so forth.
Chair Gamble, Commissioner Hong, you're a little difficult to hear. Would you mind speaking up a little bit?
Okay, so I was just wondering if there may be an opportunity to incorporate some of the green, you know, construction technologies in this proposal, if there's any room for that at this stage. Maybe not, I don't know. I just thought that would be something to consider since, you know, it's a school, you know, it's a private school, but still, you know, public sort of purpose. So it would be a good thing to maybe incorporate some of those elements, you know, drawing from the natural resources. You know, we have ample sunlight here. So instead of just, you know, utilizing just electricity, you know, hopefully some sunlight. I don't know. I'm not an expert, but just want to throw that out there since there's no comment about this proposal.
Sure.
Okay. Did the applicant want to respond to that, Mr. Cuello?
Yes, Chair Gamble, Commissioner Hong, I'd be happy to comment on that. While we're not pursuing LEED accreditation due to timing and budget, it requires quite a bit of effort that the our particular client does not have the funds to pursue. We are incorporating as many sustainable principles as we can, particularly promoting passive solar heating and lighting, with the orientation of the building providing the majority of the fenestration windows on the north side. It provides some natural lighting into the space without the heat gain that you would receive with direct sunlight. We've also tried to minimize the amount of fenestration on the east and west facades, given the amount of sunlight that would be coming in more in a horizontal direction to also help in minimizing the solar heat gain during the summer for this building. We, as a firm, we always promote the use of incorporating the energy code, so using LED lighting, high energy efficiency mechanical units, and low water use plumbing fixtures as part of our design, regardless of whether it's required or not. And so those are the types of elements that we pursue. However, if in the future the school has the funds or receives donations or has the ability to add solar panels on the roof, the fact that it is a flat parapet roof, it does give it quite a bit of real estate to add solar panels in the future, as well as keep them screened from public view. And so that would certainly be something that could be incorporated in the future. But currently at this time, we have not been asked to pursue any solar photovoltaic panels.
Great, thank you. Were there any other commissioners that had comments? I'm not seeing anybody, so at this time I will ask for a motion. Vice Chair Harrington? You're muted.
I move to recommend approval of the conceptual architect for the proposed multi-purpose building at Push Ridge Christian Academy based on the findings that the request complies with the design principles and design standards of the zoning code.
All right, thank you. Commissioner Posey, will you second that? All right, you're muted.
Sorry about that. I'll second that motion.
All right, and then Mr. Spaeth, if you can unmute the commissioners, and I will have Ms. Ancona do a roll call vote.
Okay, Chair Gamble?
Aye.
Vice Chair Harrington?
Aye.
Commissioner Bergsma?
Aye.
Commissioner Hurst?
Aye.
Commissioner Hong?
Aye.
Commissioner Posey?
Aye.
Commissioner Sturman?
Aye.
Motion passes 7-0.
Great. Thank you very much, Ms. Ancona. And will you please read our third agenda item?
Sure. Discussion and possible action on a request for conceptual model home architecture for the Miller Ranch subdivision located near the northwest corner of Tangerine Road and La Cañada Drive, 2000236.
Great, thank you. I believe this staff application will be by Ms. Williams or Wilson, Ms. Wilson, I'm so sorry. So I will turn the time over to her.
Thank you. Good evening. My name is Michaela Wilson. I'm a planning intern with the town of Oro Valley. Next slide, please. The purpose of this case is to consider model home architecture for a 27-lot subdivision known as Miller Ranch. The conceptual architecture submitted by D.R. Horton offers six models, each with three style variations. Of the six, five are single story and one is a two-story model. Conceptual architecture is reviewed for accordance with the design principles and standards, which I will go over in my presentation. Following that, I will explain the two conditions of approval. Next slide, please. The property outlined in yellow is located to the northwest of Tangerine Road and La Cañada Drive. It is adjacent to Lehman Academy, which lies to the east. To the north and west is large lot residential. Next slide, please. The approved site plan for Miller Ranch includes 27 lots with a maximum height of 25 feet. Lots 1 through 7 and 24 through 26, highlighted in yellow, are limited to single-story homes. Minimum setbacks are 20 feet in the front, 7.5 feet on the sides, and 20 feet in the rear. Next slide, please. As mentioned earlier, the proposed architecture includes six models, which are in a contemporary Southwest style. The models feature a covered front entry, concrete tile roofs, stone veneer, decorative accents, and varied roof lines, which contribute to the overall quality of design and reduce the mass and scale of the buildings. Model 503A in the lower left has a side entry garage with significant architectural features on the front elevation, such as the stone veneer, window, and trim on the variation shown. Next slide, please. The side elevations include varied massing, roofline trim, and window trim or lintels, which help break up the plane of the building and contribute to a cohesive design. Please be aware some of the windows and doors shown are optional, and the applicant can answer any specific questions you might have. Next slide, please. The rear elevations include recessed or covered patios and design elements that are consistent with the rest of the home. Next slide, please. Customers will have a choice of six color palettes, along with options for the color and style of the concrete roof tiles and optional stone veneer. The colors and materials are reflective of and complement the natural landscape. Next slide, please. Conceptual architecture is reviewed for compatibility with the surrounding area. The photos on top are of nearby Oro Valley homes, showing similar colors, massing, roof style, and design elements. The bottom photos are taken from the neighboring large lot homes to the north and west, which have similarities to the proposed models, including covered entryways, lintels, stucco, and a color palette that mimics the desert. Overall, the proposed architectural style is similar to and complements the surrounding area. Next slide, please. Now we'll go over the conditions of approval. The first condition requires enhanced side architectural elevations for lot one prior to receiving a building permit. Lot one is unique in its configuration and therefore the house needs to be rotated in order to fit. This creates increased visibility of the side elevations, necessitating enhanced facades. Until the customer chooses a preferred model, the applicant does not know which one to customize at this point. As a result, the applicant has requested planning and zoning administrative review of the enhanced facades at a later time, rather than returning to the Planning and Zoning Commission for review. Next slide, please. The second condition of approval states that no two-story home, including model 4571, can be utilized on lots 1 through 7 and 24 through 26. This restriction was made as a condition of approval during the 2018 rezoning of this property, with the goal of protecting the views of neighbors to the west. Carrying over this condition of approval for the final architecture assures this requirement will be upheld. Next slide, please. In summary, the models have been found to meet the design principles and standards, and staff recommends approval subject to the two conditions. This concludes my presentation. I can answer any questions, and the applicant is here tonight to present additional details about the homes. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Ms. Wilson. I will now turn the time over to Brent Davis, the applicant.
Brent
Davis.
Brent, can we hear you now?
Yep, sorry about that.
Oh, that's okay. Thank you.
First of all, I'd like to take a minute and thank the chair and the commission for considering our proposal and taking a look at our subdivision and our plans. A lot of what you're going to see in my presentation is going to be duplicative to the presentation you just saw. So I will move through it fairly quickly. And then if you guys have any questions, I'm happy to answer any of them. So what you're looking at here is actually a rendering of the monument sign that is going outside, that'll be going up at Miller Ranch. If you drive out there right now, actually, the sign is built and ready to go. So you can go see it in person if you'd like. And let's continue to the next slide. This is just a different version of the same layout that you previously saw. You can see on the east side of the property is the Lehman Academy. This photo does not show the additional building that I believe they just completed, but you can see it's 20 lots tucked back just west of La Cañada, or 27 lots tucked back just next to La Cañada. We'll go to the next slide. As was mentioned, we're going to offer 6 floor plans. Each floor plan has 3 elevations. We have 6 color schemes that you can put on any of the 6 plans and the 3 elevations. Each elevation and each color scheme has different locations for the darker accents, lighter accents, and some of the different nuances that come with the paint schemes. We're going to offer 3 different style garage doors. All the garage doors are recessed slightly from the front of the house, just to provide some architectural variance and a little depth to the front of the house. Same thing with all our windows. They sit back slightly again to just provide some depth and architectural variance. All of our houses are intended to have concrete roof tile. We will offer S-tile and flat tile. You'll see in one of the next slides the different colors that we'll be offering in both the S-tile and the flat. All of our plans have options for stone accents if the buyer should choose. The locations of the stone accents vary by plan, mostly to try to complement the architectural style of the plan. All our houses will have a Spanish lace stucco finish. All of our houses will have decorative coach lights, varying pop-out details and styles, whether that be wrought iron or decorative pipe vents or stucco pop-outs and things along those lines. Next slide, please. Here you'll see again our color scheme. So what you have on the left is the paint colors. Each color scheme has 3 different paint colors. You have a body color, a trim color, and an accent color. Next to that, you've got our different roof tiles. You see the 6, there's actually 9 S-tile and 3 flat tile color choices, and then our 4 different stone choices. Between the paint schemes, the different roof tiles, the stones, it provides for a lot of variation or potential variation within the subdivision. The colors all complement themselves very well, and they lend themselves to blending in and reflecting our beautiful natural desert. So next slide, please. I just wanted to throw in there, all of our homes meet the Energy Star certification. That's you mentioned LEED was mentioned in the previous presentation. Energy Star is a threshold that we use to confirm that our houses are energy efficient and considerate of the environment. Next slide. We also include smart home technology with every home we build. So you'll get a video doorbell, Wi-Fi, and Z-Wave thermostat, some Z-Wave light switches, keyless entry front door, a lot of wireless internet integration and security integration. It's pretty neat stuff that lets you check if your garage door's down, or if you want all your lights to turn on and your garage door to open up when you're pulling in within 100 feet of your house, you can program it to do it. So it's pretty neat stuff that we put into every home. Next slide. Here, we'll go through the elevations of each plan. I'll run you through what the square footage and the bedroom bathroom count is of each plan. So first we have the Opal plan. This smallest house we're going to build is a 4-bedroom, 2-bath, 2-car garage. Pretty much all the plans we build these days will offer a great room in some form of a dining room. A couple of the bigger plans will have a dedicated or a more formal dining living with a family room to try to accommodate and meet all the buyer's needs. So next slide. The Jade plan is just over 2,200 square feet. It again is a 4-bedroom, 2-bath, 2-car garage. And you also can see on each of these elevations on the bottom right of what you're looking at, you'll see our stone reflected on our C elevation to get an idea of what the typical locations are for that plan. And you can also see how the three different paint colors are used depending on the elevation and the architectural style of that elevation. Next slide. The Onyx plan is a 2,695 square feet. It's a 4-bedroom, 3-bathroom with a study, den, library, whichever term you want to use for it. One of our larger single stories. Again, these are the three elevations. Next slide. This is our Savannah plan. It's 2,534 square feet, 4-bedroom, 3-bathroom, 3-car garage. And this is the one that was mentioned that has a side entry garage and really helps break up the streetscape when you're driving down the street. It provides just a different depth and some architectural variation. It's a very, very neat floor plan. Next slide. Our Sabino plan is a 4-bedroom, 2-bath, 3-car. This is one of the plans I mentioned that does have a more formal living dining to try to accommodate that need for folks who are interested in that sort of layout. Next slide. This is our only two-story we're offering. It's a 3,185 square foot, 5-bedroom, 3-bath, 3-car garage. This house actually has the option to go up to six bedrooms, and it's got a very large bedroom with an attached bathroom downstairs that works great if a buyer has in-laws or somebody else that needs to stay with them. And at that point, we do have a couple more slides here, so we'll go to the next slide. These are going to be repetitive, so this is another layout just showing the area and what's around it. Next slide. Another example of some of the existing private residents in the area. And next slide. And then here you'll see the Lehman Academy, another existing home, and then actually what'll be kind of the entrance into Miller Ranch off of La Cañada that our future residents they'll use. At that point, I don't have anything else to add. Again, I'd like to thank you guys for taking the time and considering our product, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you guys might have.
Okay, so at this time, I'll open up questions for the applicant and staff to the commission. So if any commissioners have a question, please raise your hand now. Commissioner Bergsma.
Yes, just out of curiosity, what's the anticipated price range for these homes?
So these homes will start as a base price in the mid to high 300s, and we expect them to close anywhere from the low 400s to up over 500,000, depending on how much money the buyer chooses to spend at the design center, what features they want to put in the home. We provide a lot of flexibility in that respect, especially when we start talking about this price of home.
Thank you.
Any other questions, Hal?
No.
All right. Vice Chair Bergsma. All right, I will. Vice Chair Harrington.
Yes, I have a question about lots 26 and 27. Do you have barriers in that area? Is there a barrier between you and the commercial property? Is there walls or fences in that open space, or is it just all open?
If you'd go back to the map, that would be great. So if you're talking the lots themselves, they will have walls around them. So the backyards will be walled in. So the residents will have some sort of divider of space. the open space or the common area you see between 26 and 27, we don't have any physical barriers there. There is quite a bit of space there, and there's a wash actually that divides us from the commercial, from the Layman Academy and the commercial property to the east. So there's some very, very good natural barriers, but we don't intend to wall or close off that space. We think the wash to the east is a benefit to the community. It's a pretty area. And I would hate to block that off for our residents being able to enjoy it, whether they're in the common area or going for a walk, things along those lines. So,
do we know the estimated distance between you and the commercial property? It's probably one of my biggest questions.
I don't offhand. If you'll bear with me for a second, I might be able to get it.
Just a rough estimate.
Yeah, it's definitely. Gosh, you know, if I had to guess, it's probably 100 plus feet. You know, that wash is pretty big. I can follow up with you specifically and get you something a little more accurate, but it's a significant space. I would say it's comfortably 75, if not 100 or more feet.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you. Commissioner Hong?
Yes. Hi. Maybe these questions have been addressed already. I was just wondering about three things. If this is gated community by any chance, and also what is the distance between the homes, wall to wall, I guess. And then if the common area includes any, you know, public, you know, playgrounds or bench, you know, something to enjoy, you know, for the residents.
Sure. So it is not a gated community. The space between homes, so we have 7.5 foot side setbacks, so the closest the two houses can be together will be 15 feet. These lots are significantly wider, so we will have more space than 15 feet between the homes. You know, depending on the plan that's put on there, it's more likely to be 20 or 25 feet between the homes. But when you say wall to wall, I just want to make sure I'm addressing your question. The block walls closing in the yards will be built on the property line, so the homeowners will share a wall. But from wall to wall of the home to the home will be minimum 15 feet. Absolutely can't do anything closer than that per the approved zoning. But because of the lot size, it'll likely be 20 to 25 feet between the homes. To answer your third question, there is a couple common areas, and yeah, you can see where that mouse is circling, and we will have some community space there with benches and an area for the residents to get together and hang out or just enjoy the outdoors.
Okay. Thank you. And then I just want to remind all of the commissioners that this is just an architectural review. So that's all that we're looking at this time. So if there's any other questions, I will take those now. Commissioner Posey?
Yes, thank you, Chair Gamble. I have a couple of questions and a comment. You said that they're all tile roofs, and that's what I read in your descriptions. But under your roof specifications, describes a built-up roof. I just want to make sure that I got that right. I don't know why that was in there.
So what we intend to build is all tile roofs, as you saw on the rendering that were put in front of you. I'm not exactly sure where the built-up roof was included, but right now we don't have any plans that are going to be a built-up roof. There'll be, our product will be very similar to what you see in the adjacent neighborhood, Rancho Vistoso, from a elevation standpoint, a roof, you know, a roof aesthetic standpoint. I think that answers your question. If not, feel free to.
Yes, sir, it does. It was in your roofing specifications is where it was.
Okay.
That I read that. So, anyway, and then also in your diagrams, and I like the fact that you included the neighboring properties in there. But there was no labeling of the direction of what was where, like what was west, what was north, south. There was no labeling on that. And I did get out and look at the property, and I believe I have it figured out that the biggest problem is, or it would be for the neighboring west side of the property. I feel that's a good thing that those will be, you know, possibly one story homes. But that's all I could see was just the neighboring property to the west that, like I said, wasn't labeled. Is that correct?
Yes. And if we want to go back through the pictures, I can probably walk you through where each of them are to give you a perspective. But you're 100% right in that the closest neighbors are to the west, and this was zoned prior to us getting involved, and that single story requirement was required. We're 100% okay with it. We're obviously going to comply with it, and I agree. I think it's probably the best for the community and the neighbors. So I think if we keep going.
It's in our neighboring properties.
Yeah, I don't. So those I'm not as familiar with since we did not take those pictures. That dark, the bottom right-hand house is in La Cañada Ridge, which is just north and east of our community. I apologize. I do not know where the top two and the bottom left came from. I was thinking I know where the photos that I thought were in our presentation came from, and that's where but the majority of the photos you're seeing as part of our presentation were to the west and to the north of the Miller Ranch property.
Okay. All right. I think I understand because I went out there and looked, but by your diagram, it just wasn't specific.
I apologize.
One more question. Do you have any policy or regulation that says how many houses you can have of the same model, like together, like if there's two, there's three, or whatever? Is there any policy that you have that regulates that?
Yes. So we will not build the same house and same elevation next to each other. Generally, we put a couple houses between the same house, same elevation. Same thing with paint schemes. You know, you're not going to get the same paint scheme right next to each other or across the street. And I believe your guys' code actually has some rules that dictate on what we can do, and we'll obviously comply on.
Okay.
But even if they don't, if we're building in, let's say, Pima County, we self-regulate, because the last thing we want to do is put, you know, let's say plan A, elevation A, six times in a row right next to each other. That's not good for anybody. So we'll follow your guys' code, and we do self-regulate as well.
Okay. One more question. I was when I got there, I was really surprised that nothing was graded. You know, I was thinking why nothing has taken place at this point. If it was, I didn't see it. Of course, this is my first time looking at it. But could you tell me when you're going to start?
Yes. Yeah, so what I think you're probably seeing is if you pulled up through La Cañada Ridge and you pulled up to on Sunkist, we have to build that offsite road. There were some changes that benefited both the town and us to the drainage on Sunkist. Plans were a little bit delayed, and we're working through that. If you drive down that dirt road a little bit, you're actually going to see our entire subdivision built and is being the landscaping, the common area landscaping is being completed as we speak. So our intent would be, we would like to go ahead and start our model home and maybe a spec home or two under the assumption that we get approval and once we're able to get building permits, we intend to start very quickly. We think Sunkist will be built by the end of the month. So it'll all line up fairly well by the time we get our model done and we get that road built. Subdivision will be open, it'll be landscaped, and it'll be looking good for our future residents.
Okay, thank you.
All right, did any other commissioners have questions? All right, I am not seeing any, so I would now like to open up the public hearing. So if you're a member of the public and you would like to make a comment, please press the raise your hand button now, or if you're on your phone, press the star 9 key.
Chair Gamble, if we don't get any questions from the public, it did look like Commissioner Hong had a question.
Okay. Thank you. It doesn't look like we've got any comments from the public, so I will close the public hearing. And Commissioner Hong?
Sure. This probably is not one of those architectural review questions at all, but I was just curious about the backyard size. On average, how large is it? I'm just used to the newer homes being built in the Rancho Vistoso, Oro Valley area, having a smaller backyard these days with fence. So, I was just curious if you can comment on that.
Sure. So these lots are oversized, and our rear setback's a minimum of 20 feet. So at a minimum, they'll have 20 feet from the back of their house to their back wall. In most cases, we won't use the full buildable pad. So the backyard will be deeper than that 20 feet. That does vary by plan because depending on the size of the house, the plan depths change. Some of them can be down to, 50 or 60 feet, which then you're talking about potentially a 40-foot backyard, and some of them are going to be 75 feet deep, and then you're talking about a give or take 25-foot, 30-foot backyard. So it does vary, but they all should be very good sized, especially with them being, 80-plus feet wide. That provides quite a bit of usable space for the future residents.
Thank you.
And if I might, Vice Chair, I was able to confirm that the space you were asking for between the backs of our lots and the commercial is, depending on where you look and where you measure, is anywhere from about 80 feet to 100 plus feet. So there's a pretty good separation there.
All right. So do we have any discussion amongst the commission? If you do have comments or other questions, please raise your hand now. All right, so I'm not seeing any other questions. So at this time, I'd like to ask for a motion. Commissioner Posey, will you unmute?
Yes, thank you, Chair Gamble. I would like to move to approve the conceptual model home architecture for the 6 model homes in the Miller Ranch subdivision, subject to both conditions in attachment 1, based on the findings that the request complies with the design principles and design standards of the zoning code. Ms. Akana, do I need to read off the conditions, or is that implied?
You do not.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. And then Commissioner Hurst, could I get a second on that?
Yes, I will second the motion.
All right. Ms. Ancona, will you please do a roll call vote? And Mr. Spaeth, will you unmute the commissioners? Okay.
Chair Gamble?
Aye.
Vice Chair Harrington?
Aye.
Commissioner Bergsma?
Aye.
Commissioner Hurst?
Aye.
Commissioner Hong?
Aye.
Commissioner Posey?
Aye.
And Commissioner Sturman?
Aye.
Motion passes 7-0.
All right. And Ms. Ancona, if you could please read out agenda item number 4.
Public hearing, discussion, and possible action regarding a proposed code amendment to the noise abatement standards only for new and specific land use types and separation requirements for convenient uses of the zoning code.
All right, thank you. We will have Mr. Spaeth from the town give us his presentation, and then I believe we have Mr. Lance Willis, who is a consultant with the town, on here to answer questions as well. So I will turn the time over now to Mr. Spaeth.
Okay, thank you, Chair Gamble, members of the commission. Let's see if we can get this to work here. The purpose of this item, as Ms. Ancona indicated, is to consider a zoning code amendment to the town zoning code. The amendment has two related components or parts. The first is to update the town's noise abatement standards. This amendment is included on both the town's strategic plan and the planning division work plan. In fact, it has been on the planning division work plan for some time. The second relates to the separation requirements for convenience uses. Do note, we have several development applications awaiting both of these amendments. During my presentation, I will go through both parts or components of the proposed amendment. I'm going to discuss how the proposed amendments would work in a real-world scenario. I'm going to cover some general plan conformance for both aspects, and then finally, we'll provide a summary and staff recommendation to the commission. The amendment is being presented for a possible recommendation to town council. With regard to part one of the proposed amendment, noise abatement, as was discussed in the staff report, the existing standard is unreasonable for several reasons. Currently, the existing code requirement for noise is to not exceed 40 dBs or decibels at the property line, as you can see on screen. As you can see on the chart to the right, highlighted in the yellow box, 40 decibels is approximately the equivalent of a soft whisper at about 10 feet. Certainly, this standard for commercial uses is entirely impractical. Secondly, the standard is 40 decibels, not to exceed the property line, regardless of where the noise is located. A one-size-fits-all standard is overly simplistic. A noise standard for properties located within a tech park, for example, should not be the same for the standard applied to residential neighborhoods. The standard should take into account things like hours of operation, the type of use, and the location or context of the noise, all things the current standard omits. For some background on the amendment, as Chair Gamble mentioned, staff enlisted the services of Mr. Lance Willis, who's an acoustic engineer, who is with us this evening, again, to answer questions where necessary, and his help was to develop a more realistic and practical noise standard. Mr. Willis not only helped us develop the proposed code language, but also a technical bulletin that will be used to establish a standard for developing noise studies in the future, should the amendment be approved. Second, staff conducted a thorough analysis of jurisdictions in southern Arizona to evaluate their noise standards. The proposed amendment that you will see on the next slide is much more in line with other jurisdictions than the existing standards you can see on the table on the left-hand side of the screen. Our standards are higher in some areas as they are what we consider right-sized based on national standards. Lastly, myself and Dr. Willis conducted several site visits to evaluate the proposed standards. We visited both a drive-through restaurant and a venue with live music. The new standards, are much more reasonable while still protecting adjoining properties. Now for the proposed amendment. These standards are for new development only. I want to emphasize that. They are for new development applications only. The table on the screen that was included in your packet will be used to evaluate new development applications only as part of a required noise study when necessary. As you can see again with the comparison chart on the right-hand side of the screen, the new standards are more realistic and enforceable. Firstly, they are no longer a one-size-fits-all approach. The requirement takes into account context. For example, which land use is affected, could be where single-family residential, commercial, tech park, etc. And the standards now establish maximum noise levels for both daytime and nighttime hours for most land uses. It is worth noting there are exemptions from these standards written into the code for things like emergency vehicles or town events, among other things. Again, these standards are much more realistic and reasonable than our existing code requirement. Now for a scenario that I mentioned earlier to demonstrate how the new standards would work for the first part of the amendment. With regard to noise, there will be two separate steps. Step one, again, is where the new proposed standards would be applicable. They only apply to new development applications. So for example, the town might receive an application from a restaurant wanting to have live music. During the development review process for that application, a noise study would be required, which includes proposed mitigation measures to ensure the noise standards shown on the previous table are met. Mitigation measures could include, among other things, increased setbacks and/or buffer yards, changing the orientation of the building, or incorporating acoustic insulation into the building. Continuing the scenario further, let's say the development is approved with a conditional use permit and construction. At this point, the proposed amendment standards no longer apply. Now we've moved on to step two. At step two, which covers unreasonable and nuisance noise, will be strictly addressed by the town code rather than the zoning code. That's a distinction I want to make clear because it's a little difficult to understand if you're not familiar with it. So again, the proposed amendment will apply to new development applications for an existing or newly built development or newly constructed development, the town code standards would apply. The existing town code language for unreasonable and nuisance noise is shown on the screen for reference. Once a complaint is lodged, the police department will conduct a visit to determine if the complaint represents unreasonable noise and is thus considered a nuisance. If it is determined to be so, the property owner will need to make remedies to fix the situation, including possibly having the conditional use permit reconsidered. Again, I want to reaffirm that the proposed code amendment standards would only apply to new development. Now for part two, the convenience use separation standards. First, I'd like to cover what a convenience use is. As defined in the code and shown on screen, a convenience use is a use by which the method of operation produces a moderate or high level of traffic and impacts on surrounding uses. These include typically drive-through restaurants, gas stations, car washes, and convenience markets. These uses by code have separation requirements from certain other land uses as shown on the screen. For example, first, they must be a minimum of 250 feet from any property used or intended for residential purposes. And secondly, they must be a minimum of 500 feet from any school or park. While these separation requirements are necessary, in some situations they may prove to be redundant. So this is where the proposed code amendment comes in. In certain instances, the separation requirements may be redundant when major barriers exist between the two land uses. Major barriers include things like wide arterial intersections, as shown in the top right image, hillsides or other topographical features, and buildings either built already or planned in the future, among other things. So typically these major barriers inherently diminish the potential impacts, including noise, visual impacts, lighting, and odor by themselves. So the existence of these barriers can make the separation requirements redundant. The proposed amendment allows town council to consider these major barriers to determine if a reduction in the separation requirements could be appropriate. Any reduction will necessarily need to consider a balance between this flexibility and protecting neighbors. Now for the scenario for part two. Let's say a drive-through is proposed on the corner in the commercial area shown in red. That commercial area is across an arterial intersection from the school, approximately 225 feet away, as shown on the screen. Everyone knows the typical impacts generated by a fast food restaurant, right? Noise from an outdoor speaker, odor impacts, visual impacts from vehicle stacking in the drive-thru lane. So in this scenario, on the surface might seem appropriate. However, as you can again see on the screen, the intersection, in this case Oracle Road, is a large arterial roadway. In fact, it's a state highway between the two properties. So what might the real impacts be? Likely not much, considering the impact of the arterial intersection. So with this in mind, in this particular scenario, a reduction in those separation requirements might be appropriate. So both components of the proposed code amendment support a number of Your Voice, Our Future general plan goals and policies, including those shown on the screen. Specifically those focused on expanding economic activity while balancing the needs of the town's residents. So in summary, the first part of the proposed code amendment fixes the unrealistic existing standard and provides a more reasonable and enforceable requirement. Further, it addresses an item on both the town's strategic plan and planning division work plan. The second part or component of the code amendment provides some flexibility for convenience uses while maintaining a balance for neighboring property. The proposed amendments are in conformance with the Your Voice, Our Future general plan, and staff recommends approval. As Chair Gamble indicated, Dr. Lance Willis is with us this evening and is available to take any questions. He does not have a presentation, though. So thank you, Chair. That concludes my presentation.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Spaeth. Do we have any comments from commissioners or questions? If you do, please click the raise your hand button. Okay, we've got a couple. Commissioner Posey, will you unmute?
Yes, thank you, Chair Gamble. You know, I had to step out for just a second. Now, I might have missed something, but this is a little perplexing to me, all of this, but who enforces this?
Sure.
Who would enforce this?
Yeah, Chair Gamble, Commissioner Posey. So there's, and you may have missed this, there is really kind of two components to noise in the town should this amendment be approved. So the first part, which this amendment addresses, is that they will be, the noise generated by a particular use will be evaluated as part of the development review process. So early in the process, before they even construct the building or construct the use or whatever it happens, right? So that's step one. So we as town staff would utilize these standards, including the technical bulletin that Dr. Willis put together, to evaluate those proposed impacts. When and if that use is approved and then goes and gets constructed in the field, at that point, the town code unreasonable noise or nuisance noise standards are what apply. So there's a distinct separation between those two things on purpose. And certainly Mr. Andrews with the legal department can expound upon some of that if you'd like him to, but that's in theory how the two amendments are supposed to, well, the noise component amendment is supposed to work in harmony with the existing noise standards that the town has in the town code. Does that answer your question?
Well, Mr. Spaeth, I was wondering, does law enforcement enforce this?
Right. So yeah, Chair Gamble, Mr. Posey, so how that would happen. So let's say something gets built and a neighbor has a complaint.
Right.
So that complaint would come into the town. It would probably come into the planning department. But if this is approved, the way it's set up is we would pass that on, or maybe they called the police. Either way.
Right.
So it would be, right, the police department that would be okay enforcing this. So they would go out and they would, you know, listen to the noise and they would make the determination on whether it was unreasonable or a nuisance noise.
Okay. Thank you. That answers my question. Thank you.
All right. I went roundabout on it.
All right, thanks, guys. The next hand I see up is Commissioner Bergsma.
Okay, I have some questions on the staff report attachments. The first one is just a minor thing on attachment one, which is the proposed amendments to the zoning code. You have one minor change to the general requirements for all non-residential uses related to conceptual architecture, A2A, deleting carports. Is that really in relation, related to what we're talking about, or is that just a little fix you're trying to get taken care of as part of this larger change?
Chair Gamble, Commissioner Bergsma, let me take a look at that real quick.
On page one of attachment one.
I'm sorry. No, so that is in there. That was left over from a prior
okay
amendment in this code section. So
just a little error. Okay, not a big deal. Regarding the attachment two, typical eight weighted sound levels, providing some examples of what you might hear, different decibel levels. One that's a little confusing to me is the example for 50 decibels, which is urban residents. What does that mean?
Sure, Chair Gamble, Commissioner Bergsma, that is a good question. I think, I think what they're trying to relay there is if you're in a city environment, the typical everyday just ambient noises that you hear, right? The vehicle traffic, the noise, the honking, the whatever. I think that was their way of trying to have a catch-all. It is a little peculiar threshold, I have to admit. But that's what I would say that's trying to relay. But I can certainly turn on Dr. Willis's requirement. I don't, in all fairness, that wasn't his graphic. That was something I found, but maybe he can expound upon what he thought OSHA might be referencing there. So give me just a sec.
Okay.
And Lance, if you can unmute on your end. There you go.
Yes. What was the terminology again, exactly?
Here, I'll put it on the screen, Lance, so you can see what Commissioner Bergsma is referencing. So right here, urban residents.
Right, okay. An urban residence at 50 dBA, that would be an exterior sound pressure level. That's kind of typical of what you might experience standing in your backyard or your front yard possibly, but outside your house. Of course, that can vary quite a bit. Typically what I measure around Tucson is around 40 to 50 Sometimes it can be a little higher than that or a little lower. Just it depends how close you are to a major roadway and other usually traffic sources.
Okay. That answers my question. Thank you. So I have one more question, and that relates to attachment three. And I appreciate attachment three and the information there comparing what's being proposed to the standards that are set for other jurisdictions. And there's a lot of variance here. Obviously, Pima County, not to be heard beyond 125 feet, well, that's a pretty strict standard, it seems. Marana apparently doesn't have standards except for in relation to parks, so I'm not sure what that means. And then you've got Tempe and Gilbert, which generally have, I don't know if you call them higher standards, but the noise level that's allowed is lower. So the closest comparison is, I guess, between what's proposed and Tucson's, and we're close, but we're a little higher than Tucson. So I wonder, basically, what the staff's thinking was in setting these numbers relative to these other jurisdictions, since we seem to be on the high side relative to the other jurisdictions that are shown.
Sure. And Chair Gamble, Commissioner Bergsma, and I will give a little brief preface here and then kick it over to Dr. Willis. And again, I'll preface it with, this wasn't his graphic, but something that I had put together as part of the due diligence. So, again, as I tried to relay in the staff presentation, we feel that our numbers are a little bit higher for sure, but they are what we would consider right-sized because they're more reflective of what we see on the national level in terms of noise abatement standards. And in all fairness, you know, if you look at that table that's included in attachment one, there's of course different ways of measuring sound, right? And so there's three different columns that have three different dBAs or decibels based on the measuring scale. And so we tried in this graphic to be as close to apples as you can possibly get. But there may be a little bit of a nuance in that it's not exactly an apples to apples comparison from Tucson to us, but it's as close as they had. So we do think because our standards are what we consider to be right sized, that this code amendment can and should serve as a model for other jurisdictions. I can tell you just from experience that noise abatement standards in most jurisdictions isn't something that gets addressed all that frequently, you know? And so we think that this can certainly serve as a model for other jurisdictions down the road. But I'll defer the latter part of that answer to Dr. Willis if he wouldn't mind jumping in to expound a little bit upon where our numbers come from. So Lance, if you're available.
Yes. As far as these numbers go, I think we need a little correction on the proposed amendment to compare these directly to some of these other codes. Tucson limits are not specific about what they're actually measuring. Typically, it's interpreted as an average sound pressure level or equivalent continuous sound pressure level is what we would call it. The numbers under proposed amendment are actually the sound pressure limits for maximum fast exponential time weighted sound pressure level. So that is a very short duration type of averaging sound pressure level. The other metrics on here are more of a longer term average sound pressure level. For example, the Gilbert code uses the equivalent continuous sound pressure level, and what we have for our equivalent continuous sound pressure level is actually the same as the Gilbert code, 55 daytime, 45 dBA nighttime. So that's the reason it appears higher on this chart, but actually it's comparable to what Gilbert is requiring for the residential and I think for the commercial as well.
So Commissioner Bergsma, does that help answer your question?
It does. I guess we need a little clarification on this table because I think there's could be some confusion if we don't describe what we're measuring in these different jurisdictions.
Thank you.
All right, I've got Commissioner Hurst.
F, and it relates to the can you hear me?
Yeah,
okay. It relates to the noise impact study that's required even before a building is built at the time of conceptual design. I'm curious, you know, I've done and been involved with a lot of noise impact studies, but never before you had something to measure. So I presume this is and this is where I want some clarification. I presume what you'd be doing is applying a model to the anticipated use in order to determine the expected noise impact. But as we know from the coronavirus incidents, models are poor predictors of reality. And so what I'm curious about is how you measure something before it is actually built and what happens when the model is wrong after it's built. What remedies does the town have?
Chair Gamble, Member Hurst, I will, I can answer the second part of that. I will kick the first part over to Dr. Willis. But so in terms, if the model is off, what they need to, what remedies the town will have is we would be in that step two that I laid out, right? So let's say it's built, it was built off a particular model and expectation, showing that they would be in conformance with what our standards are, and then it gets built and it's nowhere close. They will then be, you know, one would expect, generating unreasonable or nuisance noises, and we would have complaints, and the police department would be out there following up on those things. And at that point, the applicant would need to identify remedies, whatever remedies happen to be, there could be infinite list, or infinite, to be able to rectify that, and up to including having the conditional use permit reconsidered by commission or council. And so that's another tidbit to be aware of. Almost all of these uses that are potentially going to be needing to provide a noise study, I can't say all of them, but most of them are only conditionally allowed in whatever zoning district they're proposed. So they're going to require a conditional use permit, which of course, as we all know, allows that kind of extra level of review of a number of things, including noise. So there will always be that possibility that reconsideration of the conditional use permit is necessary, and they may have to put in additional mitigation measures, whatever that happens to be. So it's clearly incumbent upon them and staff to take a look at their model during that noise study to make sure that it's appropriate and it's correct. And there is a caveat, not caveat, but there is an allowance in the code, just like in other sections of code, that allows the town to have a third-party acoustic engineer review any proposed noise study if town staff doesn't feel like it's correct, adequate, appropriate, etc. So that hopefully answers the second part. I'll turn it over to Dr. Willis to maybe answer the logistics of how you create that noise study without the use actually being there, unless Chair Gamble wants to.
Joe Andrews put his hand up. He had a comment.
Okay. Just so you know, I was muted probably for some reason because I'm learning so much. But nonetheless, the other area of enforcement for that, for nuisance noise, is the individuals can actually be taken into our municipal court and charged and have a trial and go through the whole process that way if they choose to go the hard way.
Okay, thank you. Okay. So, yeah. Chair Gamble, if you wouldn't mind, Dr. Willis, maybe you could answer the first part of Commissioner Hurst's question.
Yes, Dr. Willis.
Yes. So when we're starting a development project, it's important for developers to have standards that they are required to meet in order to plan their project and, you know, plan for cost and so forth. You know, the approach of building something and hoping that no one complains about it is a very expensive process if something goes wrong. So what we do is we will look at a site and we will inventory the sound sources planned to go on that site. If, for example, if you have an air conditioning unit on a rooftop or something like that, manufacturers will provide sound power data that you can use. So you will have information about the source. If data is not available from the manufacturer, we'll often go out and find a similar piece of equipment and do the measurements ourselves out in the field. At that point, once we have the source information, we can create an acoustical model of the site. ISO 9613 Part 2 is a common standard used for site modeling in this case. And this is widely used to make decisions about how to do site planning for noise abatement. And that's kind of the starting point. There are other models that can be used, some of them a little more sophisticated with better ground models and so forth. But that's the process we go through, and that gives us a basis for creating a noise abatement plan. And it's important to get that right the first time, because often if the noise abatement requires something such as a sound wall, that's expensive to build. And if it turns out that you need a 12-foot wall instead of an 8-foot wall, now you have to tear out what you already built, and it becomes very expensive. So we try to be as accurate as we can with these models, because it is a lot of investment to get these noise abatement plans right the first time.
Okay, that answers my question. Thank you very much. It was very, very helpful. Thank you.
All right, great. I'll turn the time over to Commissioner Sturman. Will you unmute yourself?
Thank you.
There we go.
Chairman Gamble. You know, my question here is that I noticed you have identified all different sections from residential down to parks. Is there a reason why you have not identified surface of streets? Because street surfacing has become a real noise issue through a lot of your neighborhoods, because they use the different types of materials that create a lot of noise. May I ask Dr. Willits, is there a chance that we should not recognize the street surfacing issue on noise?
Chair Gamble, Commissioner Sturman, if I may, can I?
Please.
So one of these, and then certainly Dr. Willis can chime in if he chooses. One of the exemptions from this code standard is, right-of-way traffic, so vehicle traffic on the roadway and town activity. So it's typical, I can't speak for the town engineer, of course, but it is typical for the town to not typically be subject to these particular types of requirements as far as road resurfacing and repaving project goes. I can certainly follow up with Paul Keister, our town engineer. I'm sure that the noise impacts of the surface material is something that is certainly considered during that process, amongst other things, of course. So does that help some? That it is on the exemption list as part of this proposed language.
Okay. My second question is, technically what we're doing is that we're updating our noise levels, because we're dated to a point of 40 was probably, what, 25 years ago, 20 years ago, versus what is now. And also the other communities, it sounds like they were behind themselves, because you would not pick this level of standard without having some general idea that this is where the level should be. So, I mean, I really commend you for tackling this project, because I think of the surrounding communities are just not updating themselves in this era, and this should be done. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Right, and I see Commissioner Bergsma has another question.
I guess I'm unmuted. So Mr. Spaeth mentioned exemptions, and the last exemption listed is construction activities in accordance with the town code. What does the town code say about construction activities? I assume that construction is limited at certain hours of the day. Is there any limitation on parts of the day when construction can occur in terms of noise?
Yes. Yes, Chair Gamble, Commissioner Bergsma, thank you. That's a great question. So, yes, the town code does restrict when construction, specifically grading, right, that's usually the big key issue, when construction activities can happen. And it's typically sunrise to sunset is how that is addressed. Now, we do have construction activity requirements in the zoning code as well, that there are sometimes some exceptions to that, especially in the summer months when the sun comes up super early, right, and things of that nature. But, right, that's what that exemption is in reference to.
And when construction can occur, are there any noise limits?
There are, and I can get back to you. I don't know those off the top of my head, but I can certainly circle back with you. Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, do we have any other questions from commissioners? I'm not seeing any, so at this time I'd like to open up the public hearing. If there is any member of the public that would like to speak, please, if you click on the participant button at the bottom and then click on the blue hand icon, or if you're calling in, please press the *9, and I see we've got a couple. So the first one, Carrie, can you unmute yourself? Hello?
Hi, I'm here. Sorry. Hi. Chair Gamble, members of the commission, Carrie Sylvan, 5983 East Grant. I don't live in the town of Oro Valley, but I do a lot of work as a zoning consultant. And I just wanna thank the town staff for taking the lead. I think it was Commissioner Sturman who mentioned that a lot of the other jurisdictions around have not actually updated their codes. And I've been educated a lot over the last 20 years by Dr. Willis and his cohorts on how noise works. I will tell you right now, I still don't understand it. But it's critically important, especially as we're bringing land use cases forward, that we have the right technical experts and can do the analysis so that we're making sure that we are protecting existing neighbors, but also allowing diverse uses. And the one size fits all, I have yet to see work. So the idea that this gets analyzed on a case-by-case basis and acknowledging intermittent objects that can help with noise, I think will allow some of the flexibility that we're all looking for as we work to develop within the town of Oro Valley while respecting our neighbors. So I just want to compliment staff and this commission for listening to this. And if any of you understand this after Dr. Willis is done, I'll take another tutorial from you and Dr. Willis as well. But it is critically important. So thank you.
All right, thank you. Next on my list, I've got Tim Bowen. Are you available? Hello?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello, my name is Tim Bowen. I'm an Oral Valley resident. And for those of you who aren't familiar with the term decibel, 3 decibels means twice the intensity. So when you go from 40 to 55 decibels, you are going 2 to the 5th or 32 times the intensity. So please don't underestimate an increase from 40 decibels to 55 decibels. That's a significant increase. And for me, this seems to be a solution that's looking for a problem, and it's a problem that we don't really fully understand. The problem is that we have is that for some reason, new development can somehow not even come close to meeting standards that we've had for 45 years for existing development. We've had a 40 decibel standard for 45 years, and all of a sudden we have to increase it to 55. And we should start asking some questions. First off, why do we need this? The town's actually grown 100 times since 1974. Yet for some reason, we've been able to keep this existing standard. So we have to ask ourselves, what's coming in the future that's never come in the past that requires this new standard? And there's some questions that we need to ask. For example, what types of businesses can we bring to Oral Valley at 55 decibels that we couldn't bring at 40 decibels? Also, where are the complaints right now? 40 decibels seems to be described by the doctor, Lance Willis, as a really unreasonably tight standard. If it really is, then we should see plenty of blue cards at council meetings and at planning and zoning for an unreasonably tight standard that actually impacts us in the real world that we live in right now. I'm not aware of any such complaints. And then finally, why are we seeing the code change right now? I think we're seeing it because we have some applicants who are pushing for this that want to bring in some surprisingly noisy uses that we might not realize we're about to get. We really should always question, if you need to make a change, why is your existing environment unsuitable when it seems to have worked for a long time? So if I was the staff and I was the commission, certainly if I was the commission, I'd ask the staff, you know, what's broken? Where are the real world examples in Oral Valley right now where a 40 decibel standard is holding us back? In order to make a change, you've got to understand your existing situation. And I highly encourage the Planning and Zoning Commission to really ask the tough question, why was 40 decibels good enough for 45 years? And all of a sudden now we need to go to 32 times as much. What's going on? Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Bowen. Mr. Spaeth, can you address some of those questions? Specifically why the town is changing, asking for this change now, and why the 40 decibels standard needs to increase?
Sure. Looks like Chair Gamble, Mr. Andrews has his hand up. Oh. If you want to see what he was saying first, but I'd be happy to, yes.
Okay.
Oh, I was just muted and I was hoping I could get in here for a second. It's not because I understand sound any better than anyone else, but many of the sound complaints have been coming through the police department to the prosecution department and have not been following this particular section. And most of those noises are well in excess of 40 decibels.
Yeah, and I can piggyback on that. So thank you, Chair. So those were good questions. So there's a couple things here. So the complaint side, as Mr. Andrew just indicated, because the way our code is set up, the police department primarily is the entity who follows up on those unreasonable and nuisance noise complaints. And so we have several instances in town. I'm going to not name names if I can help it, but just know that they are there. Where we have had unreasonable and nuisance noise complaint calls that are, as Mr. Andrews indicated, are well in excess of the 40 decibel requirement in the zoning code, but the 40 decibel requirement is not what the police department is looking at. The police department is looking at the unreasonable and nuisance noise standards, which is purposefully subjective. You know, there have been many instances where we on the planning staff have actually wanted to have more teeth, if you will. So yes, there is an increase in some of the requirement or the standards for noise, but it another component of it is giving us as town staff the ability to review some of those things as it comes in on the front end. So we have the code language and the backing to be able to say, look, developer, whatever your use happens to be, this is the anticipated impacts. And so you need to take these necessary measures in terms of mitigating those impacts. So there's a couple of components here. One of those is giving us the ability to be able to actually look at those things more in depth. And, you know, the question about what are these noisy uses? We don't have any uses that have been proposed to us. As Ms. Sylvan indicated, there are folks who are paying attention to the progress of these amendments, but whatever proposed uses will come in down the road, should this amendment be approved, they're going to have to comply with this. And we do have an instance in town where a particular restaurant has live music that happens to be next to a multifamily residential area where there have been several complaints to the police department. And if we had these standards on the front end when that restaurant with live music came in, it would have been very beneficial to the town. So I hope that answers some of the questions. Looks like we've got some more.
Okay, Jill?
It's a simple one. We need to make sure we close the public hearing.
Yep, I was just going to do that. All right. Was there anyone else from the public that had a question or would like to make a comment? All right. I'm not seeing anyone, so I will officially close the public hearing and open the discussion up to the commissioners. Vice Chair Harrington, if you will unmute, you can go first.
Okay. I think I have a few questions. Listening to some of the comments, it sounds like we've had some instances or problems currently, but I think this, per what we're asking for, is this is to only address the new developments going forward. So I have a kind of a quasi question. Is this for the new developments that's moving forward, or is this for the current problems that we're having? And of course, adding on to that question, is this for, are the problems that we're having, is it residential, commercial, apartments, industrial that we have in Oro Valley? Kind of, I don't have that answer. Is it residential problems that we're having? Is it industrial problems that we're having? Or is it an apartment community that we're having? Is it a restaurant? I don't want details because that's personal private information. I just want a general broad kind of an answer on that question there.
Absolutely. Chair Gamble, Vice Chair Harrington. So to answer the last part of your question, it is a restaurant with live music that happens to be next to a multifamily development. The new standards would not apply to that scenario because it's already there. So it's grandfathered in, essentially. So they would still, any complaints in that situation would still go through the unreasonable or nuisance noise process with the police department through the town code. So, and situations like that is one of the purposes of this amendment, to be able to address land uses next to each other like that on the front end. So we have the ability as town staff to go, okay, now we have an expanded requirement that you need to demonstrate you are in conformance with it. So the goal, of course, is to not have that situation happen in the future. So does that answer your question?
It does. I've got another different qualifying question too as well. Of course, we're changing the noise ordinance code. Does the town have any information or inkling that this is going to stifle business moving in, or is this, have we had inquiries, or an applicant has already said this wouldn't apply or this won't work for them to bring their company or entity into the Oro Valley area?
Chair Gamble, Vice Chair Harrington, we haven't heard that from anybody, and our expectation is that the way the table that I had in my presentation and was in attachment one is set up, the noise level standards that you see there, the DBAs, are based off of the property that is receiving that sound, right? And I tried to explain this a little bit in the staff report that, so, you know, if you're going into a tech park or you're in the middle of a shopping center or a commercial center, your standard is necessarily going to be higher, or the level will be higher for a loud noise, as opposed to it gets smaller when you get closer to a residential area, right? Which is one of the benefits of not having a one-size-fit-all thing, is that we can look at these on an individual basis and say, yeah, something in Innovation Park, in staff's opinion, shouldn't be held to the same standard somebody in, you know, La Cunada Ridge is, or whatever, right? So, I mean, that context should be taken into the evaluation. So
basically the applicant would be a resource tool for the Oro Valley PD to enforce rules on new developments or new issues that may come in the future.
Right. So right. So the step two, the unreasonable noise, nuisance noise, the portion of the enforcement isn't going to change. What will change is that if you're a use that requires a noise impact study, that study is going to kind of live with the conditional use permit, if there is one, as that application goes forward. And when that use is constructed, they're going to be held to that noise study that they provided. And so when the unreasonable or nuisance noise complaint comes into the police department, there are a number of mitigation measures, one of which could be telling them they have to take the conditional use permit back to council because they're not in compliance with that requirement.
Okay, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. All right, if we can unmute Commissioner Bergsma.
Okay, so I'm going to go back to Mr. Bowen's comments, and also I'm referring back to Mr. Space's comments in his initial part of his presentation, where you indicated that there's some urgency to consideration of this proposed ordinance amendment to, in response to some inquiries, I guess you've had, from potential developers who were sort of holding off on submitting an application until they see what we end up doing here. Can you give us some notion of what kinds of inquiries you've had? Maybe not be specific about exactly who's making the inquiries, but the kinds of uses that are concerned about this ordinance?
Sure. Chair Gamble, Commissioner Bergsma. So we haven't necessarily had specific proposals to the town for a particular type of use. We've just had conversations with folks who are in the development community that were aware that this has been something the town was interested in looking at for some time. Typically, they're, of course, commercial uses or tech park uses that are going to be subject to this for the most part, you know, where a conditional use permit is required. And I failed to mention earlier in response to Chair Gamble's question, I did want to also point out, I know Mr. Bowen had mentioned that there seemed to be a newfound urgency to try and get this done. I'd like to just reiterate that this item has been on the Planning Division work plan for almost 8 years. So this is something that multiple planning commissions and multiple town councils have continued to keep on the Planning Division work plan as something that needed to be addressed. So that's information worth keeping in mind. So it's not necessarily that it's something that came to us within the last 6 months and we had to try and fast track it. This has been something that the town has wanted to take a look at for some time. And I think, you know, Dr. Willis's and Ms. Sylvan's comments reiterate that what I said, this is really envisioned as trying to serve as a model code for a lot of jurisdictions in the Tucson area, because it's something that, you know, just because there's other more urgent matters in most planning organizations, that noise abatement standards seem to get pushed to the back burner pretty regularly. So I hope that helps.
It does. Thank you.
All right. Do we have any other comments, questions, concerns from commission? I am not seeing anything, so at this time I'll ask for a motion. Commissioner Bergsma?
Yeah, I do. I'm not ready to make a motion, but I do want to make one comment. This kind of thing could be politically pretty sensitive. You know, people, it's a complex topic to begin with. Most people don't understand it. I don't totally understand it for sure. But when you talk about raising the sound level, then people start saying, well, why are we doing that? You know, how's it going to affect me? And so we've got to be very careful the way we characterize what's happening, explain what's happening. I don't know that what's in the staff report and what's been presented tonight adequately does that. For example, I raised the question about attachment three, the comparison, the standards between the jurisdictions, and clearly we were showing different measurements for the different jurisdictions, which I think is a problem. We're sort of comparing apples to oranges, and I think we need to fix that. Also, Mr. Spaeth has cited some of the goals and policies from the general plan that he deems applicable, and I think the ones he cited are applicable. And, you know, I've looked at them too. I think, you know, there's obviously some room for interpretation when you look at plan goals and policies. For example, development goal Y, development opportunities and a transportation network that balance support for a growing economy with conservation of open space, water, natural resources, and energy consumption. The operative word being balance. And I would construe noise levels as being part of the natural resources. You know, we really, I think, in this community want to make sure that we preserve the peace and quiet as much as we can. And I'm sure people who live in residential areas would be concerned about losing their peace and quiet if the standards change. So I think that we need to be very careful here. And I personally cannot support approval of this at this point. I'm not opposed to it. I think we just need to take a little more time to clarify a few things before we move ahead and make a recommendation.
Okay, thank you, Hal. Was there anybody else? Commissioner Posey, will you unmute?
Yes, thank you, Chair Gamble. You know, this is very complex for me in particular. I don't know enough to really make a decision, but I appreciate the input that we had from the community. I wish that we had more. And anyway, I just... that's just how I'm feeling right now. But I thank you for what you said, Commissioner Bergsman. Appreciate that. That's kind of how I'm feeling right now as well. Thank you.
And Chair Gamble?
Yes.
Can I just wanted to add something, if it's okay.
Yeah.
And so I guess this is to both Commissioner Bergsma and Commissioner Posey's hesitation. So, you know, the intent of that attachment that Commissioner Bergsma was referencing was to be, and I tried to lay it out, that I recognized that it wasn't an apples to apples comparison. What it was trying to do, and I should have emphasized this when I answered the first time, was that I was trying to demonstrate with that graphic what the worst case scenario is in terms of the maximum level impact. Which is essentially, and I realized Dr. Willis had another, the equivalent pressure sound level designation for how the other jurisdictions measure their stuff. And so it was an effort to try and demonstrate what the worst case scenario might be for each of those land uses at the various time of day. And it could have been explained better. So I guess I just wanted to add that tidbit there for folks who were a little confused by it. So,
Mr. Speaker, you've done a great job explaining. I really appreciate it, what you've done. Thank you.
All right. Commissioner Hong, will you unmute?
Ellen?
Thank you. I was wondering when this study was done or this study was prepared. Was it before the onset of the virus pandemic, in which most of us are confined at home right now, and that we are all seem to be living in a very tight spatial environment? I understand that this has been under consideration for a while, 7-8 years for the town. But, you know, with what's happening right now, perhaps, maybe a new or, a bit more detailed study on the noise and, how it impacts the quality of life for the residents, especially not maybe for, less so for maybe for the businesses, but for people who are, living in the newer homes of, that were developed here during the past, 4 or 5 years even. And we tend to be living a little closer to each other from next doors and so forth. So that is my thought. Just would like to suggest that, possibly a bit more of a study done for the impact on the residents.
Chair Gamble, Commissioner Hong. So the background on the proposed amendment was conducted before the COVID-19 stuff came to fruition. We've been working on this particular amendment for almost a year now. So a lot of that data was gathered back in, fall, winter of 2019. And again, I would just like to reiterate that, the proposed standard that we have in the amendment is, again, what staff feels is, with Dr. Willis's insight, right-sized as compared to the other jurisdictions in the area. And that's based off of the national standard. So it wasn't necessarily a number that we just kind of arbitrarily came up with and decided, yeah, let's go with that. That seems like a reasonable increase. So there was background and thought put into where those standards were coming from. Does that answer your question, Commissioner Hong?
Yes. And I also wanted the town to possibly consider the ongoing proposals, especially in the Rancho Vistoso area, where there's quite a bit of proposal for high density development. So I don't know, maybe it's too late to do the study right now, but things are
will be addressed at later meetings, and there's still ongoing neighborhood meetings as well.
And Chair Gamble, member Hong, that's so if this amendment is approved and there are uses proposed there that require a noise study, they would have to provide that and demonstrate their conformance with the new standards.
All right, does that answer your question?
Sure, yes. Thank you.
All right, Commissioner Bergsma.
Yes, you had initially asked for a motion, so I'm prepared to make one if that's acceptable.
Does anybody else have any questions or comments, concerns that they'd like to address before that? No? All right. Hal?
Yes. I'm going to move that we continue consideration of this matter until a future meeting. Could be next month, 2 months, however long staff thinks they need, so that we can get a little more evidence in the record relating to how the proposed standards compare to other jurisdiction standards in this area and in Arizona, as well as other parts of the country. I think we just need to beef up the evidence and the findings a little bit so that when people ask questions about what's being proposed, they have a pretty clear idea of how our standards would compare to others. So I think we just need to take a little more time here before we make a recommendation to the council. So that's my motion. Continue the consideration. I don't know if you have to have another hearing or not. That's Mr. Andrews' bailiwick for another month or two.
All right, Joe? Or Mr. Andrews?
Sorry, I keep getting muted, but that's okay. I keep raising my hand. In the event we actually continue this out to a time that's not a date certain, there will need to be another public hearing and it will need to be posted as a zoning. So it needs to be continued to a date certain or staff will have to notice it again.
Well, I guess I defer to staff as to whether they think they can set a specific date for this to come back. If not, then I see no problem in just continuing it without setting a date certain.
Chair Gamble, if I may, just to be able to answer that question, can Commissioner Bruinsma elaborate a little bit more on specifically what it is that is being requested? Is it just putting the equivalent sound pressure level numbers in the attachment 3, or help me understand what it
was. Yeah, I think that's part of it.
1 second, everybody. We're in the middle of a motion. We should finish the motion, and then you can give some information. We need a second. We need to
let's see if I get a second. If not, it's moot.
Okay.
Is there anyone who would second that? Vice Chair Harrington.
I'll second that motion.
Second. Okay, so we've seconded the motion to continue this discussion next meeting. Would that be the specific date that we need, Joe, Mr. Andrews?
We have right now not a date certain.
That's right, and let's keep it at that for now, and then we can discuss the motion. So at this point, can I answer Mr. Space's question?
Absolutely, this is the perfect time to answer those questions.
Okay, so yes, attachment 3. I think we need to expand on that and make sure we're comparing apples to apples when we're comparing our proposal to other jurisdictions in the state, and then also if there are national comparisons that we can make, I'd like to, maybe there needs to be a new attachment or expansion of the staff report that gets into what those national standards are and how we would comply with them. So both state comparison and then national comparison. Does that clarify things for you, Mr. Spade?
Chair Gamble, Commissioner Bruinsma, it does. I could just add that what we're proposing is reflective of those national statements.
Okay, but I just want to, I guess what I'm saying is I want to see what those standards are. I don't think there's much in the staff report about them. I'd like to see them.
Okay.
Okay, so Commissioner Posey, do you have a question?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I was going to second the motion.
Oh, okay. So, all right. Well, bearing in mind with what Mr. Spaeth has said, where the intent is already reflected, I think we might be getting into the weeds a little bit here with specifying some of those attachments being updated. So if everybody is under the impression that we need more information, then I don't, where, Joe, where are we at with our motion? How exactly does, because I feel like it maybe needs to be restated.
Oh, right now you've got a motion. Yeah, sorry, Chair Gamble. But right now you have a motion to continue to a date uncertain and okay. Seconded. And you're at the point now where you're discussing it. If discussion's over, it's time to call a roll call vote to approve or not approve the motion to continue.
Okay. So, Ms. Ancona, will you please do a roll call, and can we get all of the commissioners unmuted?
Chair Gamble?
Nay.
Vice Chair Harrington?
Nay.
Commissioner Bergsma?
Aye.
Commissioner Hurst?
Nay.
Commissioner Hong?
Aye, to continue.
Commissioner Posey?
Aye, more to continue.
And Commissioner Sturman?
Nay.
So, motion fails 4-3.
I mean, did the motion not pass 4-3 or did it fail 4-3?
It failed 4-3.
It did not. Yeah, it did not pass.
So now is time to solicit another motion.
Okay, so I would like to solicit another motion. And is part of our problem the date uncertain? Mr. Andrews? I wasn't understanding exactly what you were saying about that. If it's better to have a certain date so we don't have to reopen the public hearing and notify people. I missed that comment.
This is effectively a rezoning, which requires very specific noticing requirements. And it's been noticed as a public hearing that requires comment. If it's not continued until a date certain, that means staff has to start over again. If it's continued to a date certain, we don't have to do all that noticing. It just happens again at that meeting.
Okay. So does that clarify things for some of the commissioners?
Yes.
All right. Then I will ask for another motion. All right, Commissioner Bergsma?
Well, I'll try again. let's see where this goes. So I'm going to move that we continue consideration of this matter to our July public hearing, whatever the date that is, with the allowing staff time to improve on the findings and the evidence they provided. So date certain is whatever the date of the July hearing is.
Okay, is there a second?
I second that, Dan Sturman.
All right. Ben, do we have any discussion?
Yes, I do, Dan Sturman.
Oh, okay.
Mr. Spaeth, since we are extending it to a July 2nd, Can you explain to me why did we designate between, for example, at the top residential 7 a.m. to 10 p.m.? What was the reason for that range of hours? So something at 11 o'clock or midnight goes beyond that. So in other words, you have the authority to shut the noise down, or do you have the authority only between 7 a.m. and 10 p.m.?
Sure. Chair Gamble, Member Sturman. So no, you have it at both times. And so the different thresholds apply to the different time periods. And so depending on what time of day it is dictates what threshold that you would be holding them to, the land use. Right. So, I mean, either way, if either of them is being exceeded, then, you know, there is the possibility that there might be a call to the police department for, you know, unreasonable sound and or nuisance noise issue. And so that's where, you know, as part of that process in trying to resolve that, if a landowner doesn't take the necessary steps to try and mitigate the issue, if it is an issue, then that's where, you know, the ability to bring the conditional use permit back before commission and council is one of the options, in which case at that point, the whole conditional use permit, whether it's approved or not, becomes another question of council, right? So there's obviously an incentive for somebody who gets a conditional use permit to work to try and find a remedy and mitigate that ongoing issue. So to answer your question, all of those categories apply, depending on just whatever time of day it happens.
Okay, now, so we have, say residential, 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. is 75, if I understand that's the proposed. And then at 10 p.m. to 7 a.m., it's 65. Is the police department going to have an instrument that's going to walk out there and then measure that decimal reading for them to citation them? Or is it the builder or the individual making the noise has an instrument saying, well, no, I didn't exceed this?
No, and Chair Gamble, Member Sturman, and I know Joe Andrews probably wants to chime in on this too. No, that was purposefully not the case, because I know there have been issues with regulating other types of meters in town. That's where the unreasonable or nuisance noise subjective standard is applied. I don't know, Mr. Andrews, if you want to elaborate on that.
Chair Gamble, Commissioner Sturman, when it comes to prosecution of nuisance noise, the police have the ability to prosecute that. Let's think of that as more of a short-term remedy to a long-term problem. What happens is the police can go out and shut down whatever the noise is, a party, you know, sawing wood with a power saw at midnight, whatever it is. They have the power to go out and shut that down and cite them under our town code for a class one misdemeanor at that moment in time. And that's completely separate and distinct from what's happening here. What's happening here is in the planning and zoning code, the P&Z code, what we're trying to do there is make sure when they initially build that structure that they can actually mitigate the sounds that that particular use may actually create in advance so that it doesn't become quite the problem later. They're two separate issues. The police are not going to go out there with a meter and then have somebody fight over how well the meter's calibrated. That's an issue that the town prosecutor and right now the legal services director, Tobin Seidels, has no interest in trying to enforce meter issues.
So the table or matrix that we're looking at, for me as a layperson, is not really well defined. And that's one aspect for us to think about for the next meeting, is that the table heading needs to clarify that point, Mr. Andrews, that you're just explaining. Because to me, when I really look at that right now, that means for me between 7 and 10 p.m., I have to be under 75 decibels in a residential construction. Does a construction person really know that? I mean, does he understand that based on the table here?
Chair Gamble, members Terman, if I can jump in here too. So keep in mind, the matrix that you're referencing, I believe, Commissioner Sturman, is the one that was in attachment 3.
Yes,
that I know Commissioner had his questions about. So that matrix itself is not actually part of the code amendment. That's just an attachment that we put in for reference and comparison with other jurisdictions. So if I can, I'm going to share my screen with you real quick so everybody can see this. This table right here that's actually in attachment 1, this is the table that's actually going to be in the zoning code that we will use when we're evaluating new applications. And so the scenario you referenced, Commissioner Sturman, with the construction worker knowing whether they're in excess of this or not isn't really applicable, because these standards are only going to be applied on the front end when evaluation of that development application is being processed. Does that make sense? Because once it's approved, then it becomes an unreasonable or nuisance noise issue in the town code.
Okay.
Sorry if I didn't make that clear.
I guess I didn't pay attention, so.
No, and I should have pointed that out.
So Chair Gamble, we still have a motion and a second on the floor to continue this to the July meeting.
Okay. Skeet, your hand is up. Did you have a question, or were you just going to second?
I think it was already second.
It was already second, yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure she didn't have another.
No, I'm sorry. I didn't have another question.
Okay. All right. So, Ms. Ancona, can we get another roll call vote?
Sure. Chair Gamble?
Nay.
Vice Chair Harrington?
Aye.
Commissioner Bergsma?
Aye.
Commissioner Hurst?
Aye.
Commissioner Hong?
Aye.
Commissioner Posey?
Aye.
And Commissioner Sturman?
Aye.
Motion passes 6-1.
All right. Thank you, guys. I'm now going to turn the time over to Mr. Spaeth for a Planning Division update.
Yes, thank you very much, Chair Gamble. So the Planning Division update this month is we have 4 focus areas, Zoom neighborhood meetings regarding the Vistoso Golf Project coming up. The first one is on Thursday. Hopefully you all got the Zoom meeting link for those. If you didn't, please let myself or Ms. Ancona know, and we'll make sure to send those over. Those, I imagine, will be very well attended, and we're hoping will be very productive. So beyond that, we also have a Zoom neighborhood meeting on Tuesday, June 16th for a rezoning and conditional use permit request for a property on the northeast corner of Oracle Road and Suffolk Drive, down by the Sprouts. There was a neighborhood meeting for that property about a year and a half ago. Some of you may have attended that. This is a different application, but that is scheduled for June 16th. So again, if you don't have the Zoom meeting link for that, please let us know and we'll make sure to send that over. As of now, for the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting scheduled next month on July 7th, we will have the continued item from this evening. And then we also tentatively have a public hearing for a development process code amendment. Thank you, Chair. That concludes my planning update.
All right. Thank you. Can I have a motion to adjourn? Vice Chair Harrington?
I make a motion that we adjourn.
Can I get a second? Commissioner Posey?
I second that.
All right, meeting adjourned. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
All right.